From WGCU News, this is Gulf Coast Live. Florida lawmakers are considering a bill that would protect adoption agencies from facing litigation if they decide not to work with same-sex couples based on moral or religious beliefs. Supporters point to cities like Boston and San Francisco, where some faith-based child placement agencies no longer provide adoption services for fear of lawsuits from their stance on not adopting children to same-sex couples. Opponents of the bill liken it to the Religious Freedom Restoration Act in Indiana and say it would violate the state constitution. We'll hear from both sides. Plus, April 16th marks Holocaust Remembrance Day this year. This day of remembrance marks the anniversary of the Warsaw Ghetto Uprising on the Jewish calendar. Seasonal Sanibel resident and Holocaust survivor Steen Metz joins us to tell his compelling story. We'll also find out about Holocaust Remembrance Day events taking place around Southwest Florida. First, this news. This is Gulf Coast Live on WGCU. I'm John Davis. Thanks for joining us. April 16th will mark Holocaust Remembrance Day. The day marks the anniversary of the Warsaw Ghetto Uprising on the Jewish calendar. Later this hour, we'll find out about Holocaust Remembrance Day events taking place around Southwest Florida, and we'll hear the story of one of our community's own Holocaust survivors. But first, Florida lawmakers are considering a bill that would permit adoption agencies in the state to perhaps turn away same-sex couples on the basis of the organization's moral or religious beliefs. The legislative proposal follows a March vote in the state House to strike down Florida's ban on gay adoption. The three-decades-old ban on gay adoption remained on the books, even though it hadn't been enforced since 2010, when an appeals court upheld a 2008 ruling by a Miami-Dade judge that found no rational basis for the ban. The bill's sponsor, Republican State Representative Jason Broder, points to cities like Boston and San Francisco, where faith-based child placement agencies like Catholic Charities no longer provide adoption services for fear of lawsuits for their stance on not adopting children to same-sex couples. Supporters also point out that private faith-based charitable organizations providing adoption services don't receive state funding and that the bill wouldn't prevent gay couples or individuals from seeking to adopt a child through another agency. Opponents of the bill liken it to the Religious Freedom Restoration Act in Indiana and worry about how the bill could impact broader perceptions of the state. They also say it could violate Florida's constitution. Democratic State Representative Dave Kerner has said if adoption agencies want to discriminate against gays, they shouldn't be in the business in the first place. Should faith-based organizations be forced to work with people, even if doing so would violate their moral or religious beliefs? How do we balance religious freedoms with the rights of minority groups like the LGBT community? And in regards to debate over this bill, has what's been in the best interest of children been lost in the conversation? Joining me now for a closer look is Michelle Farquharson. She's the Quality Management Director for the Children's Network of Southwest Florida. Michelle, welcome back to Gulf Coast Live.
Thanks, John.
And we're also speaking with Nadine Smith. She's co-founder and CEO of Equality Florida, the state's largest LGBT rights advocacy organization. Nadine, thanks for your time today.
Thanks for inviting me.
And we had planned to speak with attorney John Stemberger. He's president and general counsel of the Orlando-based Florida Family Policy Council, but he has had to decline just a few minutes ago. We found out he would not be with us, so we're sorry to not have him here, but we will do our best to represent his position as well. And I invite listeners to join our conversation. You can connect with our guests by calling 1-877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. Send email to gulfcoastlive@wgcu.org. Post comments and questions on our Facebook page at WGCU Public Media, or join the live Twitter chat using the hashtag GulfCoastLive. And Michelle, let's go ahead and start with you, with the Children's Network here in Southwest Florida. Just tell us generally, what is your position on this bill?
The agency is a state-funded agency, and so our position is to enforce the laws of the state of Florida. And so we allow adoption by any person in the state of Florida who meets those criteria, which are pretty much any person who resides in the state of Florida, or if we do adoption throughout the entire nation, actually. And so we allow families of all types to be able to adopt children from our foster care system.
So whenever the state did stop enforcing the gay adoption ban in 2010, even though it was still on the books, that was something that the Children's Network did.
Absolutely.
So is this something that you would support as far as, your counterparts, organizations that might be faith-based and might have a moral or religious objection to working with, you know, a gay individual or a same-sex couple?
Well, as a state-funded agency, we make sure that we pretty much comply with all the laws and all the policies and all the procedures that are established by the state.
Well, and I would imagine that, again, receiving state funds to discriminate against anybody would violate the state constitution. That's not really something you could do.
Absolutely.
Okay. And Nadine Smith, let's bring you into the conversation now. Just tell us a little bit about Equality Florida's position on this bill and why you take that position.
Well, this bill is outrageous. It absolutely does subvert the idea that adoptions ought to be based on one standard, and that is what is in the best interest of that particular child. And let's also be clear, you know, groups were not forced out of doing adoptions in Massachusetts or elsewhere. They voluntarily ceased doing adoptions. They just chose not to do it after an article came out in the Boston Globe talking about a very hard-to-place children who had been placed in homes with gay parents through Catholic charities. And this upset four bishops who decided that unless they could stop that kind of adoption from happening legally, that they didn't want to be in the adoption business. That was their choice. So the issue here is very clearly a response to what should have just been a procedural move to get rid of language that had already been declared unconstitutional. But what it has provoked is a backlash and an attempt to do an end run around the court's prohibition on unconstitutional discrimination by permitting organizations, and they need not be religious organizations, to simply say we don't serve your kind, regardless of whether or not that means denying a child a loving permanent home. It's wrong, and in many ways it's even more despicable than what's been unfolding in Indiana, because this is taxpayer-funded, legalized discrimination that puts what a child in the foster care system needs at the bottom of the stack.
Well, okay, and I want to clarify something here, Nadine, because in listening to last week's House committee meeting, State Representative Broder, who's sponsoring the bill, characterized it a little differently when talking about Catholic Charities' decision to no longer provide child placement services in cities like Boston and San Francisco. He was kind of pointing to the sort of progressive LGBT anti-discrimination protections that exist there, and kind of made it sound like the reason they pulled out had more to do with fear of facing lawsuits or litigation. But you're saying this really came down from Catholic authorities, bishops there.
Yeah, I mean, people should be clear. This happened in, 2005. Non-discrimination laws had been on the books in Massachusetts since 1989, in Boston since 1989, long before any of this. There was a story in the Globe. I mean, just to be clear, nobody was forced out of the adoption business. They ceased to do adoptions, despite the fact that, you know, I mean, the Globe reported that over the course of about two decades, the Catholic Charities had placed 13 children with gay parents out of, you know, 700 or so adoptions that they had facilitated. And those 13 children were considered hard to place with adoptive parents because they were older, they had physical or emotional difficulties, meaning if they had not found the parents that they found, they might not have gotten parents at all. And it was that article, not the sudden passage of anything, that created, you know, that caused the, you know, their decision to stop placing, to stop doing adoptions. Mm-hmm. So that's, you know, I mean, let's also be clear that here in Florida, this ban has been labeled unconstitutional since 2008. Adoptions have proceeded by all of the organizations that do adoptions. So what is the problem they seek to remedy? The only reason this legislation has come forward is because the House voted to strike language that was constitutionally unenforceable. And in doing so, they've created a scenario where state-funded, taxpayer-supported adoption agencies can simply say, we don't serve your kind, even if it's not in the best interest of a child.
And Michelle, from what I understand, there's like some 82 different private adoption agencies that are licensed by the state of Florida. And it really only like a small number of them are actually faith-based organizations. But would it be – what kind of an impact do you think it would have on the system as a whole if you did have organizations like Catholic Charities or Florida Baptist Children Homes make the decision to stop providing these services?
I think as long as people have options that they could utilize within the community, that's a benefit of it. It's a very controversial topic. We all know that,
right.
And that's what we're facing. Thankfully, as a children's network, that's not an issue that we would have to deal with or we would have to face. We're committed to finding families for children.
And Michelle, whenever you were on our show last fall when we were talking about adoption, I remember in preparation for that looking at a database of kids who were available for adoption, and they really just ran the full spectrum. There were children there who identified as trans or who identified as gay and would actually prefer a same-sex couple or a gay individual adopt them. Would you have concerns there with an organization that, say, had the legal ability to not work with gay parents, having those kids in their care and then maybe placing them with parents who might not really be the best fit for them?
The benefit for us is that because we would be the ones who would initiate those home studies that's needed and that entire adoption application process. So these children would always have the option to be placed with the families that are most appropriate for them.
Okay. And how exactly does that process work? Because I know if, you know, hypothetically this bill did pass and a gay couple wanted to adopt a child, they could be turned away by one agency and then they could go to another one like the Children's Network. But what about the kids? Do they have any say in what sort of agency handles their placement?
Well, we're responsible for the placements of the children because the children are entrusted to the Department of Children and Families and then through to the Children's Network because we're the subcontracted provider within this agency. And so our duties and responsibilities to assure that we're working diligently to attain adoption permanency for children who need a family.
And Nadine, I know a big issue here with this bill has been that it would be a violation of either or both the U.S. and Florida constitutions. Are these faith-based organizations operating with or without state funding? Because I think that seems to be the crux of whether or not there would be a constitutional violation there.
Well, just to be clear, this doesn't simply apply to faith-based organizations. They call it they could be secular, they could be faith-based. But the language that is used is not simply a religious objection, but a moral objection. And so when this first came out, there were people going, so somebody can say, we're a Christian group, we won't let Jewish people or Muslims adopt or atheists adopt, or, we're a group that won't let a single person adopt. I mean, by whatever criteria we decide. And the legislature, during one of the hearings, there was an attempt to amend it so that, at the very least, any agency that said there are certain classes of people that we will not serve would be required to say so up front so that people didn't have to experience the humiliation of going through the process and then being told at some point, oh, I'm sorry, now that we realize you are part of this class of people, we don't serve you. And they could have done that. The legislator, the sponsor, could have added that. And they voted it down because I think they understand how repellent that is, you know, to Americans, that you would hang a sign that says, we don't serve your kind. But it would have been more honest. And what this does is it, with very little criteria, says you can simply assert a moral decision that we won't serve a certain group of people and assert it presumably at any point during the process. And it's just wrong. And it turns this entire process on its head by saying the personal prejudices of the people doing this should trump what is in the best interest of that particular child. And I think it's purposely constructed to attempt to be an end run around the decision that says banning gay people from adopting is unconstitutional.
And this issue of the parallels that have drawn between this piece of proposed legislation and Indiana's Religious Freedom Restoration Act, does that additionally concern you, regardless of what the bill would or would not actually do, just the perception and the backlash that Indiana has been suffering?
Oh, I think it's reckless of the legislature to be moving this kind of legislation, particularly given what has occurred in the wake of Indiana. But I actually find this to be even more pernicious, a bill. And you know, it's interesting to hear the sponsor of bill pretend that it wasn't a hastily put together piece of legislation as a direct response to striking the anti-gay language from statutes. Of course it was. In fact, he's replaced the entire bill at I think a couple of times, certainly at least once, and has introduced 16 new amendments. That is an indication of how slapdash and reactionary this bill is from the beginning. And unfortunately, I think you've raised a really important point, because beyond the politics of it and beyond the blow to Florida's image as, you know, a place moving backwards instead of forwards when it comes to equality, I think you hit the nail on the head. There are LGBT young people in the foster care system that, rather than placing them in a home where they will feel supported and, you know, loved and cared for, this is a mindset that sends to a place that, you know, will indoctrinate them in our beliefs rather than take care of the needs of that child. And those young people, those children, those teenagers, they don't have a say in that process. They don't get to say, no, we want a wider pool of prospective parents that, you know, we think create a safer environment for us. The needs of the children are completely abandoned to serve individual prejudice. And be crystal clear, this is about all adoption agencies being able to assert that they simply don't serve these, you know, you people, whatever that group might be.
And Michelle, does that ring true for you? I mean, in terms of placing kids and making sure that they're with an agency that really will maybe have their best interests at heart, in terms of how the kid sees themselves and not necessarily how their religious beliefs would dictate how they see them.
Well, actually, our process here is a bit different than Nadine speaks to. We make sure that we obtain home studies of our families. We do a matching process, assure that the family has the skill set and the parents' abilities and resources to be able to meet the child's need. And that's a primary focus. And then we look at the child's needs to determine if this is a potential good match between the two. And if so, and if the child is old enough, we do introduction between the child. We do blind visits, and then we do the introductory visits. And we move at this readiness and the speed of the comfort of the child towards that adoptive placement. And so our children in our local community do have a voice in what happens with their lives and do have a voice with their placements.
Let me just
be clear, though. You're an agency that doesn't seek to discriminate. You're an agency that doesn't adopt the position that there are people that you won't serve or people that you would exclude, which I think is how it ought to be.
Right, that's true. We're non-discriminatory.
Right. And I'm talking about agencies that believe that their particular personal beliefs, religious or not, ought to be foremost in the decision process of whether a child gets adopted or not. And for children who have a choice between staying in foster care or going to a home that would finally be theirs, when the choices are narrowed by prejudicial laws, that's a tough place to put a child in, as opposed to an agency that gets state funding and is required not to discriminate.
Yeah, I think that brings up an interesting point. Is there an effort made with the Children's Network to keep kids in their local community? Or, you know, when you're looking at, you know, who the best parent might be, are you perhaps looking to prospective adoptive parents who have contacted another agency maybe somewhere in the state just to kind of broaden the pool there?
Absolutely. So we primarily focus on minimizing trauma to children by minimizing the number of placements that they have to go through. So if the current caretaker isn't able to adopt the child for whatever reason, then we broaden the network. We look at making sure that children maintain those valuable connections that they have. So we'll start out within the local community and then throughout the state of Florida and then nationally as we need to expand the scope.
All right. We're taking a closer look at a Florida House bill that would protect faith-based adoption service providers' right to not work with individuals or couples if doing so would violate a religious or moral belief. You can join our conversation and connect with our guests. We're speaking with Michelle Farquharson. She's with the Children's Network of Southwest Florida. And we're also speaking with Nadine Smith, co-founder and CEO of Equality Florida. It's the state's largest LGBT rights advocacy organization. You can join the conversation with a phone call to 877-GCU-TALK. That's 877-428-8255. Join our live Twitter chat using the hashtag Gulf Coast Live or comment on Facebook at WGCU Public Media. And Nadine, I'm going to ask you something that I'd hope to have the opportunity to talk to John Stemberger about, but again, he at the last minute was unable to be with us. But in brief comments that he had made during last week's House committee meeting, he had really talked about the need for this bill to have expressed preemption in it. Otherwise, he was concerned it would be...
Hello?
Yes. Nadine? Nadine, do we have you with us?
Hello?
Yes. Can you hear me, Nadine? All right. Well, we'll try to get a better line there to talk with her about that. And I was hoping you could tell us just a bit more about the Children's Network in general in terms of just how many child placements you typically deal with. How large is the coverage area, I guess you could say?
The Children's Network covers the 5 county areas of Southwest Florida, including Charlotte, Lee, Hendry, Glades, and Collier counties. Currently, we're serving 1,900 children who receive either in-home services, so those are the children whose families need some additional support and services to maintain the safety and well-being of the child in the home, and also we serve children who have been removed out of their parents' care. Some of them have a goal of reunification, so eventually they'll make it back home to be with their parents or the caregivers from whom they were removed. Others are residing with relatives or non-relatives, people with whom they've had long-term, long-lasting relationships. And then there are others who are in our foster care system. And we have successfully placed over 1,200 children for adoption since our inception in 2003. And this year, we're focused on achieving over 135 adoption in the local area.
All right. Well, congratulations and best of luck on that goal, because that it's really best for all of us when kids find, you know, forever homes.
Absolutely. We want children to grow up in environments where they feel loved, nurtured, safe, and protected.
All right. And Nadine, do we have you back with us?
I'm back.
All right. All right. I wanted to ask you about this issue that John Stemberger had brought up at last week's House committee meeting on this bill. And he had talked about the fact that in the bill's language, there was nothing about expressed preemption written into the bill. And so without that, he really thought that passing this would be a waste of time because it would never be able to stand up to, you know, local anti-discrimination ordinances. Do you think that's the case?
Well, we think it's unconstitutional overall. I do believe that Jason Broder, who is the representative sponsoring this bill, is bringing an amendment that would exempt all adoption agencies from adhering to non-discrimination ordinances at the local level as well. So this is a very bad bill that has the wrong priorities when it comes to looking out for the best interests of children, that would allow taxpayer-funded, legalized discrimination. And it's about to get worse by even exempting it from existing non-discrimination laws.
And are there other, what you would consider perhaps anti-LGBT pieces of legislation that you're following through the current session?
There are. And, you know, I think what we're seeing is this this moment in the country where, as marriage laws are now treat gay couples as equal, and the Supreme Court is on the verge of answering the question nationwide, there has been this backlash of pretty spiteful, mean-spirited bills. I think Indiana is the most obvious one. I think there were 19 anti-gay bills introduced in Oklahoma. All of them, none of them passed, thankfully. And similar legislation that was put down in Georgia and Nevada. And unfortunately, while other states are seeing the folly of this sort of backlash Florida has plunged headlong. Not only is there this bill that would allow, you know, that is an Indiana-style bill aimed at adoption, there's another bill that would, a transgender discrimination bill that would undercut local policies, some of which have been on the books for nearly a decade. It would allow discrimination that specifically targeted the transgender community. We continue to do the work, hoping that bill will not move forward. But I think it is Florida experiencing the backlash that has been happening across the country, and our hope is that cooler heads prevail. We don't want to see Florida take the spotlight the way Indiana has, but I think that's what's coming if these bills continue to move forward and are signed by the governor.
And just hypothetically speaking, if this bill does advance and ends up passing this session, Representative Broder's bill, what will be the next step for Equality Florida? Do you see a constitutional challenge in the future?
Well, our first stop is the hope that the governor will do the right thing. There's a national adoption agencies, national child welfare organizations that are speaking out, denouncing this state effort to use taxpayer dollars to discriminate. That are speaking up later today. I hope that legislators on both sides of the aisle and the governor pay close attention to the kind of attention that Florida is getting. This isn't something that moves us forward. This isn't something that serves all the citizens, and it's absolutely not something that serves the young people in our foster care system that want permanent homes and whose needs should be put above other people's prejudices. So if it passes, we will push the governor to veto it, and we will make sure that the entire country knows what's unfolding in Florida.
All right. And Michelle, just on a final note, I wanted to, just reemphasize that, when an agency like the Children's Network is looking to place kids with the appropriate parent, if someone is turned away, it's not a discriminatory act. I imagine there is probably a set of rubrics that you look at in terms of what an adoptive or foster parent would need to already have just in terms of their ability to care for a child and the skill sets that would be necessary for that.
Absolutely. And if an applicant for adoption in the state of Florida is denied that opportunity, they have a right to a fair hearing. And so the decision doesn't just stop with us only. And so we would absolutely have to defend that decision. And the decision has to tie back with one of the criteria that we would say why the parent would not be a good fit for a child.
And by and large, does that happen very often, or do you find that the folks who are really stepping up to be adoptive or foster parents are coming at it from the right place and have the means and the skills to be, good parents for these kids who really need them?
Right. The majority of them do.
Okay.
Absolutely. It's the exception when you have a parent who applies that doesn't meet the criteria established.
Gotcha. Well, that is all the time. Go ahead, Nadine.
I was just going to say really quickly. I think that's such an important point because this isn't about who has a right to adopt, because some people aren't going to make good parents. But it has nothing to do with sexual orientation or these issues that this bill seeks to make primary. The only criteria should be what's in the best interest of children. And this puts obstacles in the path of people who would adopt, and it narrows the pool of potential parents those kids deserve. And it's wrong, and hopefully it'll be defeated.
Right. I think regardless of where anyone falls on this issue, we can all agree that what's in the best interest of the children needs to be at the forefront of any decision. Well, thank you so much, both of you, for joining us for this portion of the program. Nadine Smith is CEO and co-founder for Equality Florida, and Michelle Farquharson is Quality Management Director for the Children's Network of Southwest Florida, based right here in Fort Myers. Thank you both.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
We're taking a short break, but when we return, next Thursday marks Holocaust Remembrance Day. April 16th this year marks the anniversary of the Warsaw Ghetto Uprising on the Jewish calendar. We'll find out more about commemorative events taking place next week here in Southwest Florida, and we'll hear one local resident and Holocaust survivor's story. That conversation's just ahead. Stay with us. You're listening to WGCU NPR for Southwest Florida.